Now joining us, I'm pretty sure, is none other than Monica Schaefer. Again, you might recall Monica Schaefer spent about 10 months in prison in Germany for doing literally a video apologizing to her mother. And today marks the anniversary that she was actually entered the main prison where she stayed for 10 months. And she is here to tell her story to start the new year. And she's just a delightful lady. And we think you're going to enjoy the next hour. So sit back, relax. The chat room's open inside the iLive.com. Click on the live chat button if you want to call in. Again, 323-275-1314. And Monica, hi. Welcome to Inside the iLive.
Hello, Dennis. Thank you so much for having me on. This is just a delight. It was really great to talk to you a few days ago, very informally. And yeah, that's how this came about. And today is indeed the anniversary of the first full day at the Stadelheim, the women's wing of the Stadelheim prison in München or Munich. And I was, of course, arrested on January 3rd, but first they shuffle you around here and there. And that was quite an adventure, or people might call it misadventure. But anyway, there are stories to tell. Where does one begin? My goodness.
Well, I'll tell you what. For those who just don't know, because we do have a fairly large audience and new people come all the time, just let people know why it was you were actually arrested.
Right. Okay. So in June of 2016, I made a little video of apology to my mother, who is deceased. Both parents are gone. But I started feeling really badly about reproaches that I made against my parents when I was a teenager, when we were learning all these things in school about the horrors of the Germans and the Nazis and World War II, all the propaganda, all the things that now I know are lies that we learned about those death camps as we learned about it then. And I come from German parents, immigrants to Canada. I grew up in Canada. And, you know, this is what we're learning in school. So I'm kind of horrified by that. And I'm saying, gee, why didn't you do something to stop all those horrors? You know, you could have organized with your family and friends and done something to stop all that horrible stuff from going on. And, you know, my mother just quietly and solemnly, softly said to me, Monica, we just didn't know about those things. We didn't know about the death camps. We didn't know that was happening. And then, you know, fast forward many, many years later, as I started to wake up about events as they really are happening. And that awakening for me started with figuring out 9/11, 10 years after 9/11 happened. So about 2011, I started to peel the layers off my eyes. And of course, after I figured out 9/11, I started looking into things that happened before 9/11 and figured out that lying was not invented just then in 2001. So that's when I started to remember those reproaches that I made to my parents, and I felt really badly about it. Now I couldn't talk with them anymore because they're no longer with us. And then, yeah, my brother and I, we were together in June of 2016. I went over to visit him, and he has all this nice video making equipment. And I'll just mention here that Alfred, my brother, he is currently in jail, facing more charges, by the way, at the end of this month for things that he said in the trial that we both went through together. So, yeah, just to bring it forward here, January 3rd of 2018, I was on another visit to Germany, and we had attended the speech crime trial of Sylvia Stolz, also has spent years in prison a while back because she was Ernst Zündel's attorney. Ernst Zündel had spent years in jail for so-called Holocaust denial. And she was his attorney and did her job too well. This was probably about 10 years ago, I think, where the judge even was admonishing her, stop, you're breaking the law just by saying these things, or you can't bring that evidence. Anyway, she did not stop talking. This was right in court. They actually physically hauled her off, and then she ended up spending over 3 years in jail herself. Now, that was back then, after she got out, as political prisoners are wont to do. She carried on with this very important work of truth-telling, and she had given a speech in, I believe it was in Switzerland, and in this speech, it was about freedom of speech, and she actually didn't say the word Holocaust once in that speech, is my understanding of it anyway. But when she got back to Germany, they recharged her for that speech. They can say, oh, it's in the context, you're still denying the Holocaust. Anyway, their crazy law in Germany, paragraph 130, it doesn't even have the word Holocaust in it, but it is clearly the law to prevent people from actually looking at the truth about what took place or did not take place in World War II, surrounding all these myths and fables of this so-called Holocaust. So she has been battling that court, that those charges ever since. And we simply attended the trial on January 3rd, 2018 as observers. Now,
Monica, I want to just kind of speed this up a bit, just change the flow of flavor a little bit. Ready?
Yes.
What did you actually feel like when you saw the gendarmerie, the bailiffs or whatever, approach you to arrest you while you're sitting in the courtroom?
Oh, my goodness. It was surreal. Yeah, they did a very snappy recess, very unexpected.
What did you feel like? What did you
feel? Yeah, what I felt.
Saw that happen?
It was surreal. I didn't feel like I was in the... It felt like I was in another body or just another world. It was very strange. I protested. I said, "Hey, I'm a free person. I'm a Canadian. I'm not doing anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. Who are you? Like, what? Where's your authority?" Anyway, they basically hauled me off. I mean, they handcuffed me. I didn't have a choice in the matter.
Now, normally, Monica, when these types of things happen, your consulate gets involved. They say, "Hey, why are you holding her? What did your consulate do for you?"
Well, at that moment, they weren't present. And
of course
nothing.
What did they end up doing for you?
Yeah, about 2.5 weeks later, after I was in prison, and really those first 2.5 weeks with zero contact with the outside world, zero anything, I felt like I had dropped into this deep, dark cave. And really, it was... absolutely something I'll never forget. Time slowed down incredibly. I mean, each minute, each hour, each day seemed like an eternity, and I had no idea what was happening in the outside world. It honestly felt like I was in this hole. Now, about 2.5 weeks after the arrest, the consulate did come to visit me. So they do have a consulate in Munich. And they came, and I didn't even know who was coming. The guards, they just said, "Okay, you're going downstairs today. Somebody's here." And I assumed it might be the lawyer, my lawyer. And it was suddenly the consulate. So somebody who was now speaking English to me, and I was extremely surprised. Now, they made it very clear to me that they are not there to defend me, like to be... sort of coming up against the laws of the land. They couldn't do that, but they were there to see that I was okay, like physically okay, that I wasn't being starved or tortured or anything like that. So anyway, that was actually quite a relief to me to meet them, but I also at the same time didn't really trust them because I knew that my government was not going to be on my side. The government was all part and parcel of the enemy forces who were basically doing all these things to us. That, and I had had some experiences in the previous year and a half to tell me that was so, that none of our elected representatives are actually able to really represent us. They are all puppets. They are being controlled by the hidden government. So I knew that already. So I had this deep sense of distrust of them. However, they did turn out to be quite friendly. And yes, they really made it clear they couldn't defend me. You know, they couldn't do anything about the laws, but that they wanted to make sure I was physically okay, and that they could also be in touch with people that, you know, like family members, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know if you know, Monica, but Germany is one of those countries that the United States has warnings against Americans actually visiting. China was just placed on this list, but Germany's actually been on a list of warning to American citizens to be careful visiting, because you can be detained without having any real reason why, based on what you might think is possible. So yeah, Germany's always been known to us to be an actual dangerous place for Americans to visit. Don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that. That's just incredible.
It's actually on a warning list of American citizens to be careful while traveling to Germany, because you can actually be blocked from exiting. And China just got put on it, but Germany's been on that list for quite some time.
That is so interesting. And so it should be on that list. You know, it obviously was dangerous for me to travel there. And I did not know. They didn't send me a letter back in 2016 telling me, "Dear Mrs. Schaefer, you should be careful about traveling to our country because we have a file open on you." And they did indeed have a file open on me since days after the video, because I happen to have relatives who are dear, loving people. However, they are completely a product of the re-education program a la George Orwell in Germany. They are good people, but they are completely misguided and miseducated. You know, this re-education, I put that in quotation marks. Of course, your listeners can't see that. But they think they're doing good. And they reported Alfred and me to the authorities back in 2016. So, you know, these, you could say, are they betrayed us. They would be like in the days of old when witches were being burned at the stake. They might be the first to light the fire under our feet and thinking they're doing good. You see, that is what is so crazy about all this. It's the psychological warfare that we have been subjected to. You know, the war never ended just because the bombs stopped dropping. The war carried on. In fact, it accelerated. And I would say that psychological warfare is worse. It's the worst kind, because the people themselves become agents of their own destruction, which is exactly what's written in the protocols of the Elders of Zion. So yeah, that's how that was.
Now, so you're in jail for 2 weeks. You finally get your consular visit, which is normally done. 2 weeks is a fairly rational time to motivate the sources to get it to you, unless you're a high-level political prisoner, if you know what I mean. But someone like us, 2 weeks would be pretty good. How long did it take for you to actually meet with the lawyer and start to plot how the heck you're going to get out of this mess?
Okay, the lawyer who was representing Sylvia Stolz, Wolfram Nahrat, he was present when I got arrested. When I was down in the dungeon of the courtroom in the holding cell for about 6 or 7 hours, during that time, he was able to come down and see me for about 2 minutes. Literally, it was just this very, very brief encounter. But he assured me that if I wanted, he could help me, and that he would be present the next day when I went before the judge for a hearing, for them to decide what they're doing with me, you see. So they can arrest somebody, but then they have to decide within short order and make a formal declaration of why they're actually holding you. Because, of course, at this point, no charges are laid. There's not been a trial. Nothing has happened. They're just going to be holding me. So, indeed, he came the next day when I was brought back to the courthouse. Because that night I was brought out to a prison cell in another town outside of Munich, held there. I mean, those hours just crept by so slowly. That's a whole, it's like a lifetime went on in those 24 hours. And then I was brought before the judge. So that lawyer, he was there the next day, and he ended up becoming my lawyer for the trial, which started 6 months later. And so, but as far as I didn't have tons of contact with him during those 6 months, but I did have, you know, written contact and the occasional visit from him. But that didn't really get going until a little bit later in the jail. Like that first month or two in jail, it really seemed like an eternity. Time crept by extremely slowly. And I could talk about the expansion and shrinkage of time. It was the most interesting experience I've ever had. And, you know, you think time ticks along steadily because we have clocks and we have calendars and they are extremely steady. But in terms of our perception of time, my goodness, that's a whole nother story, because as the months went by, time sped up for me. It became actually frightening how quickly time started going by after a while. I didn't want to wish my life away. And the other thing about it is, here I was a prisoner for nearly 10 full months, and yet I never knew until the hour of my release that what would happen, like when I would be released. Most times when people are in jail, they know their end date. They have their sentence. They know when they're coming out. So they actually would be happy about time speeding up in jail. But for me, I did not know how long I would be there, when I was coming out, until the hour of my release. That's when I knew that I was being released on time served immediately. And I can tell you that was also quite a traumatic experience. That might sound strange for listeners, but the spitting me out just as suddenly as they swallowed me up, that was not the easiest thing to experience. It that had its own challenges, let me tell you. Okay. But
So we're going to be going into a break maybe in about a minute and a half. So before we get into any more heavy, deep stories, we'll just kind of go off. How's Canada right now? How you doing, Canada? How are things at home?
Yeah, things are actually just great right now. Things are fine. When I first got back to my hometown, it felt not that great. It felt somewhat hostile. There's a great deal of groupthink in my hometown. But I have to say, over these past weeks, and now it's been 2 months that I've been back home, I'm feeling a lot better. I'm feeling a lot more secure here. And there are a lot of people who are being very friendly to me and have welcomed me back home. And they may not know what the issues are about and they may not understand the issues, but a lot of people have given me very warm hugs back home, saying, we're happy that you're back.
Monica Schaefer, everybody, back with more right after this. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's Fetch Inside the Eye Live again, January the 5th, man, 2019. Boy, has time been flying by. Started this show, what, 2011? We're 2019. That's all pretty good stuff. You know, Monica Schaefer is joining us. She's in Canada. Again, she is the really a political prisoner at one point of the German Talmudic court systems regarding their basically protection of a fake history. Monica, what they're doing out there is in the chat room, you're a violinist, correct?
Yes, I do play the violin. That's right.
Play the violin. And of course, as you know, they had an orchestra inside Auschwitz. It was kind of a famous orchestra. And when Jewesses who played in that were asked why we had an orchestra at Auschwitz, they said, oh, we were just slaves and the Germans would have to play for the Germans while they ate their feast. And if we missed a note, they would shoot us.
Oh, my goodness.
Pretty tough place to play, huh?
Oh, the stories they come up with, you know. Yeah.
And the sad part is you told us, you know, as we all know, too, but you've mentioned this, the truth is no defense in a German court. How absurd is that, isn't it?
It is so bizarre. And let me just tell you something else. And your word Talmudic court system, that says it really does. Now, in the German court system, if you are a political prisoner, in other words, you are there simply for words that you have spoken Well, if you try to explain to them how you reached your conclusions, or if you try to bring forth evidence that is going to support your conclusions in the German court of law, well, guess what? You are reoffending. You are making new crime. I mean, how bizarre does it get? So this just goes around and around and around in a circle. You could make the crime because you said something that they do not allow you to say. Then you go to court for it. Then in court, you're supposed to be able to defend yourself. So you explain it. Oh, you've just done a new crime. We're going to make a new court date for you. And guess what? That is exactly what they're doing to Alfred, my brother. He's going back to court January 28th, facing new charges for things that he said in court in our trial, which went from July till October of this past year.
Yeah, we got a quick call coming in. 516 area code. Hi, welcome. You're on the line with Monica Schaefer.
Hey, why don't you get the Jewish webmaster of Daily Stormer on?
Okay. So basically, then, Monica, you can't even defend yourself in court. You know, you can't defend yourself. Are you concerned at all now that you've got personal experience about what's going on in the court systems because you've been through it? Are you concerned at all about the use of weaponizing the term anti-Semitism to create anti-speech precedents?
Well, that term anti-Semitism, I mean, that has been their tool, their trick, their weapon to shut down any rational thought and talk and just any criticism of Israel, any criticism of what Jews are actually doing. So if you point out facts of what they're doing, they just call it, oh, anti-Semitism. But, you know, I think that that word is losing its power, is losing its strength. But it's being replaced by other weaponized words, like these words just keep on piling up on top of each other. I think the newest, worst word, weaponized word, is racist. You know, racism, like any critique of the current agenda to flood our lands with people from all over the world is now, you know, the new word is racist. So all these weaponized words, that's part of the psychological warfare. Alfred talks very well about all those things. It, you know, he talks about how it compartmentalizes our brains. It causes us to not be able to think clearly and see clearly anymore. I think I might have lost you. Are you still there? Hello.
Okay. Sorry about that, Monica. We lost you about 30 seconds ago. I think we reconnected with the studio.
Yes, I can hear you now. I realized we had lost each other. Okay.
Yeah, we were talking about basically the racism, and it's a weaponized word. We deal a lot with that already on the show, so we can skip that part. But yeah, we certainly get that. But, you know, the question I have for you now, and we kind of joked about it, but it's the food. The food inside the courts or not inside the courts.
You know, I think our connection has gone.
You actually said, you know, all in all, the food was pretty good. Wasn't quite hotel food, but it wasn't.
Dennis, I think the connection has gone sour. Do you still hear me? Yeah, I think we've lost each other again. Somebody might be interfering with our connection here.
Okay, Monica, are you back?
Yeah, your voice is kind of getting all warped, but I'm back now. Can you hear me clearly? And I can go ahead.
You're actually coming through fantastic.
Okay, I think you talked about the food. You want me to tell you about the food?
Yeah, talk about the food. Well, I debug everything.
Okay, yeah. Actually, you know, there were a lot of prisoners who would just complain incessantly about the food, but I didn't subscribe to that sort of let's just complain about everything here, because sometimes the food was okay. Sometimes it was actually pretty decent. And, you know, I did after a while learn and figure out how to make it so that I was eating very healthy and very well. Now, with a bit of extra money, and I had some money in my account there, and thank you very much to people who donated. People would send 5 or 10 euros in letters, and that was just fantastic because that would go into my account. And twice a month, we could shop from a list. It's not like you go into a store, but you'd have a list, and then you fill out a form and put the product numbers on there, and then a few days later, twice a month, that would happen, that you got your box of goodies. And so I would buy extra fruit and vegetables and healthy things and supplement the prison food. And then on days where we actually got good stuff, I would get extra. Like, they did not starve us. There was plenty of food. In fact, you had to learn to be okay with throwing food out into the Schweineeimer, as they call it, the pig bucket or the compost bucket. So you'd keep extra. And we did have a little box in a refrigerator that could be locked, but not in our cells. So in the limited time in the afternoon that the cell doors were open and we had access to the hallway in our wing, we'd organize our food for the next 21 hours or whatever until the cell doors would open again the next morning for the courtyard walk. And so on days where there was something good, I would get extra and put it in containers and put it in my little refrigerated box and just supplement my food that way. And I always had ginger. I'd learn to eat fresh ginger and start my morning with a big, little bit of a squeeze of lemon in water. And I kept healthy. I was really proud and happy about that I was able to avoid all these sicknesses that were going on around me all the time. So yeah. Food was okay, and I made it work.
It's not like the Eisenhower death camps.
Oh, my goodness. Talking about the Eisenhower death camps, and my father was in there, and he escaped miraculously, I would say. There was a prison guard who somehow saw some value in my father and took a liking to him, and he helped him escape in the trunk of his car. This was just an incredible story. So otherwise I wouldn't be talking to you now, but he said that between a third and a quarter of the people around him in those camps were dying where he was at, and they were using their spoons to dig holes in the dirt to get out of the cold and the elements. And he said people would come in healthy and strong, and within days they were sick and not able to even crawl, and then dying. And then these trucks would come by and pick up all these dead bodies. I mean, that was horrible. That was a deliberate starvation plan. This was after the hostilities ended.
Yeah. Vera from Canada. Hi, you're on with Monica Schaefer.
Hi, Monica. We've never talked to each other. I just wanted to wish you a happy new year, and I'm so happy that you're out. And I wanted to know, now, where do you live? Where are you living now?
Well, I don't think it's a secret, so I'll just say it. I'm in Jasper. So, that's where I am.
Oh,
and thank you much for your, thank you for your good wishes. Thank you.
Jasper is basically, I heard that the road in Jasper in the wintertime is not even maintained.
Well, actually, the Highway 90 shut down for a few days all over. I've been out shoveling like twice a day, basically.
That's good. Keep you in shape.
Indeed. It's great exercise. I don't mind shoveling one bit. And I was shoveling for a friend as well while she was gone on holidays. So it kept me busy hopping between my place and her place. And yeah, but the road, I mean, they do get maintained, but the one between here and Banff is sort of a lower priority. So it does shut down sometimes in winter.
Yeah, because I know my son went on it and he said it was such a nightmare that he couldn't believe it. He was just sliding this way, sliding that way. And it even said, this road is not maintained. You know, I'm not sure if this was, I think last year, maybe the year before. anyways, I just want to wish the best wishes to you for this year, and I hope your brother doesn't get a lot of time. And thank you for all that you've done, you know, like just for coming forward and speaking up about your plight, because people haven't got a clue. There's some people that are still so dumb because they hear it over and over, the Jewish lie, and they're like, we know that they are going to fall, for sure. I have no doubt in my mind, just the sooner the better, because they're making everybody suffer in the process. Anybody that's really paying attention, why would they throw them in jail for saying anything? Just simply speaking something.
Yeah, you know, you hit it on the head there with why do they have to put people in jail for speaking? Obviously, if we were just speaking lies, they could use argument and evidence to counter our speech. But the truth, there's nothing left for them to do but to enforce silence, and they make these laws. Like I always say, truth stands on its own. It stands on its own. So, yeah, that's really great what you're saying. But also, I just want to say, you know, I was asleep until just a few years ago. So it's nothing to be ashamed of for people out there who are just starting to figure it out and learn. It's nothing to be ashamed of. We've been subjected to all this, these lies all our lives. It's like a drip feed, slow drip feed of toxic lies coming into our bloodstream.
I'm 60, and I believed it up until just a few years ago. I mean, after starting to listen to Fetch and catching on of all the crime and everything, you know, and then Hailstorm was, I don't know if you've listened to it, you most likely have. That
yes,
like certainly shows the other side. But they've made a business out of this Holocaust lie. So it's a business for them now, because that's how they get money and sympathy.
Yes, and not only is it big business, it has structured the world as it is. Plus, it's used as a bludgeon against anybody who criticizes the current agenda of flooding our lands, and basically the agenda of doing away with us, the white people, yeah, the people of European ancestry. And so then right away they bring out the Holocaust myth and story and say, whoa, you know, that's racist and that's going to bring about the next Holocaust. Well, while the whole thing is based on a myth and lies.
Actually, it's all based on Holocausting the one target demographic. So they're trying to immobilize everybody so that they are basically frozen and they don't react to their own self-interest. That's really what's happening here with that whole thing. Vera, anything else quick, and then we want to move on?
No, that's basically it. I had one more thing, but I can't think of it right now. Happy New Year to you again, Monica.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Now we have we've picked up Monica, some people from Germany that listen to the show. Obviously, France has started to pick up a little bit, and what they've told me, and I've seen it in the chat room actually today. Even once you witness this level of show trial environment, you really realize that you are living in a nightmare, aren't you?
Yes, it. I think that just the fact of the imprisonment of people who are disagreeing with the officially sanctioned story, that alone has done a lot to wake people up. So you could say, how stupid of them to have imprisoned us. That's really a stupid thing to do, because they've just served to awaken more people to the falsehood of their narrative, haven't they? So anyway, that's how I feel. And I haven't been shoved off into a corner and silenced. No way. And Alfred, he's in good spirits, and
Alfred, you know, he was on my show, I think back in June, and we found him to be quite audacious in how he was structuring his rhetoric. And we were questioning, quite honestly, why he was going about in the way that he was. I mean, again, we've been doing this all. We're all professionals at this type of rhetorical discussion. And we did have questions about what he was. What do you think has motivated him to come out as vocal as he has been?
Yeah, I mean, I know that I did hear about things. I mean, in jail, I couldn't tune into these shows and whatnot. And I think he was sort of pushing and pushing and pushing ever further, basically sticking, poking the hornet's nest.
Yeah, poking the hornet's nest, yes.
Yeah, and I mean, if I had been able to, you know, pull back the reins a little bit, I would have. But I couldn't do anything.
Now, Alfred, his sense is that he feels that the regime, this Talmudic regime in Germany, is about to go away, and that therefore he is putting himself down in history as being on the side of right and vocalizing it clearly and effectively, because he has been effective. They wouldn't go after him otherwise.
Exactly.
Do you feel that is one of his motivations?
His motivation is to bring an end to the lies and crimes of the perpetrators of all this. I mean, when he realized and understood what is really going on in the world, he just felt, look, if not me, then who? Because he has the knowledge, he has the wherewithal, the intelligence, and he has the courage to do so. And so he just feels it's his life's mission to fix this problem. So his intentions are very, very noble. I mean, it is just, you know, he's basically, you know, sacrificed himself in, he knew this was not going to end with, you know, that he's just going to be able to carry on forever. He knew this would basically lead to the gulag for him. But his mission is to wake people up and thereby to turn this ship around. And I mean, that's my mission too. I might have a slightly different style, and that's fine. We need all of us to be at this. And, you know, he explained it in court too, because the judge kept on misinterpreting things that Alfred was saying as threats. He says, no, I'm just warning. It's like if you're telling somebody, don't go out in this big blizzard because it might, you know, you might get lost and not come home because you might freeze to death. That's a warning to the person. That's not a threat. A threat is if you're saying, look, I'm going to shoot you if you do this or that or the other thing. That's a threat. But so he was trying to illustrate that what Alfred is doing, he's just pointing out what the Jewish elite is doing and saying and their actions against us. So, but they've turned everything on its head and make it sound like, well, Alfred is the one who is doing all these evil and bad things. No, it's completely been turned upside down on its head. So he's the messenger. He's like the weatherman. So don't shoot the weatherman just because he tells you there's a big storm coming up, you know, and you don't like that storm. So you're going to shoot the weatherman. Well, that's not going to make that storm. It's not going to prevent the storm. So Alfred is the weatherman here. And he's, you know, basically we shouldn't be shooting the messenger.
And while you were obviously mixed in with the German prison population, you're nothing more at this stage, quite frankly, than a political prisoner of this Talmudic system that runs Germany. What was the mood or the tone of the fellow prisoners who came to understand why you were there?
Oh, my goodness. I felt that I was very well respected and loved in the prison population, and not by everybody. I mean, I'm not going to make a sweeping generalization, but, you know, I did feel like I was surrounded by love there. And it's really interesting when I would first, you know, encounter somebody and you're talking, you know, you're going for a walk at the courtyard hour, and you naturally ask each other, why are you here and what's going on? And I would tell them I'm a political prisoner. And they, what does that mean? Oh, I'm here because I said the wrong thing. And the German prisoners with whom I would speak, they would just drop their jaws in astonishment initially. Because, you know, no, how can that be? We have complete freedom of speech. It's in our Grundgesetz, which means the foundational law of Germany. We have complete freedom of speech. And of course, that's what they learn in school. And they believe that, along with all the other lies. But, oh, wait a minute. If you start talking about the Holocaust, oh, well, that's different, they say. But then they start to think about it. And in the prison population, I would say that they are much more willing and open to listening because they themselves are there for, you know, maybe they've come on hard times or whatever. I mean, they're all there for different reasons, but still, they generally are going to be more open to listening. And they did. I mean, they did. A lot of people gained a whole new understanding of what's going on in Germany from, you know, their encounters with me. Mm.
And the lesson that you really should, that, you know, hear for everybody that's listening still, and thank you, everybody, for listening. First show for The Fetch here on Inside the Eye Live is, Monica, the main thing that people need to shed is fear, isn't it?
Oh, yes. That's so true, because our fear equals their power. I mean, they use this fear against us, that, and there's a reason why they keep on making us scared with just everything. I mean, they if we shed our fear, it basically turns it around and they are the ones in panic, and they are in panic mode. That's why they're getting crazier and crazier with their actions, and why, you know, things like the German court system, it's so bizarre that you can't even defend yourself there without committing new crime. And I mean, they are in panic mode and they are just going all out.
Monica, don't the people in court feel embarrassed knowing that they are part of the charade, because they can't be stupid people?
Yeah, I would think so. And that brings me back to something that Alfred was with his strategy in court. I mean, basically not a single person that sat through that trial could say afterwards, oh, we just didn't know. We just didn't understand. You know, we just didn't understand it. No, they are all guilty because they understand the picture perfectly well. And that whole trial, the reason it went on so long is because the videos were being shown, Alfred's videos that he has made, you know, these brainwashing series and the 9/11 gatekeepers and controlled opposition, and all these videos were being shown. Even the videos that I recommend at the end of my short 6-minute video called Sorry Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust, the one in which I apologize to my mother's spirit. At the end of that video, I recommended that the viewer, to learn more, watch these three videos. And I named three videos there, and they went on by on the screen. And the judge asked me, why did you recommend those? And I explained that they were very helpful in my education. And even the titles created a little bit of a story in and of itself. The first one was Questioning the Holocaust, Why We Believed. The second one was The Greatest Problem of Our Times, and that was Ursula Haverbeck. And the third one was Off Your Knees, Germany, Ernst Zandl, so his story. And that those titles tell a story just right there in a nutshell. And so we watched those videos too and had them translated. Of course, the ones that were in English anyway. And that's why it took so long. So that was a huge education for everybody that was in that courtroom. And like you say, they don't get to those jobs by being stupid. They're intelligent, but they're obviously working for the wrong master. They've sold their soul to the devil. And at some point, you know, that's not going to do them, it's not going to do them any favors in the end, really.
And Monica, with that, you've welcomed the new year on Inside the Eye Live. Thanks for coming.
Oh, thank you so much, Dennis, for having me. It's been just a delight. And I want to echo what your previous guest had said in the previous hour about just thanking you for all the great work that you do. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Monica. Monica Schaefer for everybody. Again, now released political prisoner from Germany. Back safely in Canada. It's The Fetch Inside the Eye Live. Thanks for listening, everyone. Take care. Have a great afternoon in America, and we'll see you all Thursday for Inside the Eye Live, prime time.